So, in today's session, we were given the freedom to choose a verse. So we thought we will choose 10:10, and then we thought we will do 7:16, and then we thought we will do, it won't make sense unless we do 2.54, 2.55. So we're going to do a number of verses. Yeah, not just one, because it is contextual. Unless you're reading the Bhagavad Gita on a daily basis, it's better you study the context and connect the verses. So we'll try. Okay, please repeat after me. This is 10:10. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam enamam upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So, I just want to read the purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, Buddhi Yogam is very significant. We may remember that in the second chapter, the Lord instructing Arjuna said that He had spoken to him of many things and that He would instruct him in the way of Buddhi Yoga. Now, Buddhi Yoga is explained. Buddhi Yoga itself is action in Krishna consciousness. That is the highest intelligence. Buddhi means intelligence and yoga means mystic activities or mystic elevation. When one tries to go back home, back to Godhead, and takes fully to Krishna consciousness in devotional service, his action is called Buddhi Yoga. In other words, Buddhi Yoga is the process by which one gets out of the entanglement of this material world. The ultimate goal of progress is Krishna. People do not know this. Therefore, the association of devotees and a bona fide spiritual master are important. One should know that the goal is Krishna, and when the goal is assigned, then the path is slowly but progressively traversed, and the ultimate goal is achieved. When a person knows the goal of life, but is addicted to the fruits of activities, he is acting in karma yoga. When he knows that the goal is Krishna, but he takes pleasure in mental speculations to understand Krishna, he is acting in jnana yoga. And when he knows the goal and seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness and devotional service, he is acting in bhakti yoga or buddhi yoga, which is the complete yoga. This complete yoga is the highest perfectional stage of life. A person may have a bona fide spiritual master and may be attached to a spiritual organization, but if he is still not intelligent enough to make progress, then Krishna from within gives him instructions so that he may ultimately come to him without difficulty. The qualification is that a person always engage himself in Krishna consciousness and with love and devotion render all kinds of services. He should perform some sort of work for Krishna, and that work should be with love. If a devotee is not intelligent enough to make progress on the path of self-realization, but is sincere and devoted to the activities of devotional service, the Lord gives him a chance to make progress and ultimately attain to Him. So, 10.10 is it's an extraordinary verse where it is again being reiterated that those who attain goals and those who want to set Krishna consciousness as a goal would receive intelligence from within for them to make progress. So one needs to understand basically the process with which we could attain this particular buddhi. How do we attain buddhi? How do we listen to the instructions from within? This is a question that needs to be answered. How do we receive instructions from within? So fundamentally, the first point we want to understand is that yoga, for many aspects of yoga, specifically now there is such a great interest in Hatha Yoga, and in Hatha Yoga is just one part of the 8 parts of yoga, the Ashtanga Yoga process. Ashtanga has 8 limbs, and this is just one limb of Ashtanga Yoga. So we have Yama. Yama is to basically live according to the moral rules of society. Someone has to have some intelligence at least to follow the basic morality of society. Then there is Niyama. Niyama is to follow the rules and regulations of wanting to attain something even more important than the basic activities of society. And then there is Yama, Niyama, then there is Hatha Yoga, which is yoga. And this yoga, Hatha Yoga process, is fundamentally required for us to be able to process our devotional service and to engage in sadhana for a prolonged period of time. So the whole activity of contorting our body into different shapes, different asanas and so on is meant to allow the yogi to purify their senses, because externally when they perform yoga, there's an ability to purify the senses from within. So there is an ability to change senses from within. So basically they are trying to change things from within by acting externally. Yeah? That you can make some external action and internally you change things. A beautiful example in our own movement was given by Srila Prabhupada. Upendra Prabhu, I'm talking about the late 60s, one of the senior disciples of Prabhupada, he was once very curious. He told Srila Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, I'm not very enthused about paying obeisances to my god brothers and god sisters. I know that they are like me. They are not very serious. So why should I pay obeisances to them? Because it really doesn't make any sense to me. Because they are not really authorized. They are not in the capacity to receive my obeisances. Because I feel they are on the same level as I am. In some cases, they are not even doing as well as I am in Krishna consciousness. What is the point in paying obeisances?" Srila Prabhupada said, "No." He said, "You pay obeisances externally. By paying obeisances externally, you're acting on the bodily platform. And when you act on the bodily platform, it will have an effect on your words. You will not speak out insultingly because you're paying obeisances to someone. You can't really wake up and get up and pay obeisances and call them curses. You can't do that. So you're basically going to have an influence of that physical activity on the mind. When there is a mental culture which is developed by external action, then that forms, particularly when there is a mental activity which happens because of external actions as well, then it forms habits. From habits, you have a character. From character, you develop a certain culture of bhakti. So Srila Prabhupada wanted us to follow the external principle because the external has the ability to influence the internal. So when we address devotees and our acharyas in Vrindavan, they used to be paying 2,000, 3,000 obeisances. They used to have a certain standard. X number of rounds, so many number of obeisances. Everybody used to be paying obeisances. I can give you one more story. This is from Vrindavan. There was a very senior Gaudiya Vaishnava sannyasi. He was 98 or 99 years old when he left his body. He was almost 100 years old. So this was a disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And this Maharaj, he was sitting in a Sangha in Vrindavan. And this Sangha had younger devotees, there were sannyasis. This Maharaj was the oldest sannyasi. He was a direct disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. At around 1 o'clock, there was a brahmachari, a very young brahmachari from the kitchen. He came out of the kitchen downstairs and he shouted out, "Lunch is ready." The moment this Maharaj heard lunch is ready, he grabbed his bag and started running downstairs even though he could not walk. So everybody stopped him. "Maharaj, please stop. Guru Maharaj, please stop. We can bring your lunch upstairs here. Why are you running downstairs?" He answered, "When a Vaishnava is calling, you obey." You see? This was 98 years old, very senior sannyasi. "When a Vaishnava is calling, you obey." So this was instructional. So the external action brings the mental culture, and the mental culture allows us to create an environment which allows bhakti to thrive. So external habits have an internal effect. Yoga, particularly yoga, hatha yoga, has a principle of being able to transform the internal by purifying the different chakras. It has the ability to raise consciousness from the lower chakra to the higher chakra. So basically an expert in hatha yoga has the ability to hold the shakti between two chakras and concentrate within certain mantras. This is the process of ashtanga yoga. So there is yama, there is niyama, there is yoga, there is pranayama. Pranayama is quite interesting. Pranayama was specifically practiced by our sages. It is also given in our samskara book. Sannyasis are given a certain process for pranayama even in our culture. We had pranayama as a part of our culture. But Srila Prabhupada thought 16 rounds and regulative principles are complicated. We do not want to give them any more complications. We'll leave them with this. So he didn't cause any more, he didn't want to give us any more instructions. He left us with this because there's a lot more in our books and the practices that were done by our acharyas. So this pranayama process particularly was adopted by the yogis, the Ashtanga yogis very specifically. And the purpose was for them to be able to prolong their longevity. Everyone who is born has a fixed number of inhalations and exhalations. It's fixed. That is longevity. Vedic science does not count longevity by years. They count by number of inhalations and exhalations. That is the smallest count of time. So if someone were to have a faulty breathing process, they can end their life quite soon because they are not breathing in a proper pattern. So as a consequence, to prolong the longevity so that they could focus on attaining the sadhana in that particular lifetime, the yogis had the ability to control their breath or to take in one breath and to extend the activity of that breath for a prolonged period of time. So the effect of pranayama in reality was for them particularly to increase the number of longevity, the number of years of longevity, so that they could be on the planet. And then if these four activities of yama, niyama, yoga and pranayama are done nicely, then one develops pratyahara. What is pratyahara? It is the control of senses. So control of senses is a particularly known objective of every yogi, including the bhakti yogi. We control our senses, the hatha yogi, the ashtanga yogi control their senses. Without sense control, one can't achieve anything. So the control of senses is the objective of five preliminary steps of ashtanga yoga. With the control of senses, the ashtanga yoga process goes into dharana. Dharana is concentration. The ability to concentrate comes from the control of senses. And then from the control of senses and the dharana, which is concentration, one has the ability to engage in meditation, dhyana. So how do I meditate on a certain image? How do I meditate on the form of Krishna? This dharana goes into dhyana, meditation. When there is prolonged meditation in different areas of the heart, chanting specific mantras and being able to concentrate, one enters into a trance, which is called samadhi. So this is Ashtanga Yoga, the eight steps of yoga which are generally followed. And it is not very well known that all of this was merely to control senses and to achieve the same process that we are trying to achieve. But the process of Bhakti Yoga is descending. We are Kripa Siddhas. We are dependent on the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. We are dependent on the mercy of Lord Nityananda. The process of Ashtanga Yoga is ascending. It is going up based on our effort. So as a consequence, over a period of several ages and several yugas, when they found that the quality of the environment was poor, and they found that the ability of the individual was poor, the process turned from one where we are going to go on our effort to one where we are going to depend on mercy. So now in Kali Yuga, we are completely dependent on mercy. This is the whole fact. That is the reason why we are Kripa Siddhas. Positioning ourselves simply is the whole goal of Krishna consciousness. Positioning ourselves to receive mercy is the whole process of sadhana bhakti. Chanting with great depth produces compassion in our heart. This is spiritual compassion. This is not material compassion. Spiritual compassion and material compassion are different. Material compassion is when we start tearing up and we start crying when we see someone afflicted with some kind of pain. Spiritual compassion is compassion when we start crying when we see someone separated from Krishna. Because we realize the pain of being separated from Krishna, we start crying out when we see someone else separated from Krishna. Several years back when Srila Prabhupada was in New York City or in one of the suburbs of New Jersey, he was taking a walk. As he was taking a walk, he was walking along a golf course. And in this golf course, he saw some elderly Western gentlemen dressed in very good clothes in a very posh club playing golf. And these were a group of old gentlemen, retired, you know, executives perhaps, retired wealthy people. Srila Prabhupada looked at them and he was observing them. He was on the other side of the fence. He could see them. Devotees saw tears rolling down Srila Prabhupada's eyes. They were quite astonished. They asked Srila Prabhupada, why are you crying? And Srila Prabhupada commented, they don't know that they are in the mouth of death and they are wasting their time pushing a ball into the ground. You see, this was basically making Srila Prabhupada cry, and this would not have made us cry. We would not be crying if we see wealthy old men playing golf. It made him cry. This compassion comes from the chanting of the holy names, of wanting to save those because they are in separation from Krishna. Srila Prabhupada was experiencing deep separation from Krishna. This separation from Krishna saw him, made him see real suffering. He saw people suffering really because he was separated from Krishna. This compassion, which is the spiritual compassion, it comes from the chanting of the holy names. When someone becomes very compassionate and they are chanting and calling out Krishna, at the same time, they also feel, I have no qualification to help these people. I have no ability to help these people. I really don't have any strength. So they call out Krishna, Krishna, I have no strength. I have no ability to help these people. They are suffering. I am powerless. So compassion and humility are the gifts of Harinam. When one is sincerely chanting, they have compassion towards others. And when that compassion grows, they become helpless. When they become helpless, they call out to Krishna, saying, Krishna, I want to help. I don't have any power. How can I help? Krishna, please help me. I want to help these people. When Krishna sees that someone has deep compassion and is also humble enough to realize that they don't have the ability to help, Krishna acts on their behalf. This is Krishna Shakti. This is Krishna Shakti. Empowerment in our movement requires Harinam. Everything requires Harinam. We call out on Harinam and we become empowered because with Harinam comes compassion. With compassion comes a need for power. With compassion comes a need and the ability to think in a humble way, saying, this is not my capacity. I want to do so much, but I can't because I'm powerless. Krishna steps in and Krishna is going to assist in those areas. So our power comes in through humility and compassion. This is empowerment. This is our empowerment process. We receive Krishna Shakti through Harinam. Harinam is the whole process of receiving humility and compassion for us to be able to act in this world. No one can act without power. And anyone who is sincere, who is in a leadership position, and every one of us is a leader in different capacities, every one of us is a leader. When we start examining our need to act in this world, but we don't have the power, please understand, all we have to do is call upon the holy names. We just have to call upon the holy names as instructed, and that automatically connects us to real power, which is Krishna himself. Now, Krishna in this particular verse is talking about Buddhi Yoga. Why is there so much instruction in this movement? Why is there that every class a sadhu comes in and he talks about Harinam, a sadhu comes in, he talks about aparad, a sadhu comes in, he talks about the process, but why is there such a struggle in this movement? Why is it that we are struggling? Why is it that we are not running the world in many ways? This is a question that we have to ask ourselves. Why is there that we have such access to such deep philosophy, we have access to such extraordinary intellectual capacity, we have access to the power of all powers, we have access to the source of all powers. Lord Chaitanya is being worshipped by thousands and crores of Lakshmis. You know, it is said millions and millions of Lakshmis are worshipping Lord Chaitanya. Then why is it that we struggle so much? This is something which we need to understand. We need to process this particular information as to why is it that there is so much going on in our movement when we have access to such a lot of information. It is said, if a proper class is given, just one class is enough for people to get all instructions that are necessary for them to proceed in Krishna consciousness. In one class, we speak about nama. We speak about renunciation to some extent so that we can make sacrifices to chant nama. We sometimes speak about deities. We surely speak about the presence of the guru. We speak about the power of the guru, the need for faith. We cover so many wonderful topics in general in every class because every purport has a little bit of everything. But yet there's such a struggle. So one needs to understand as to why am I struggling? Why am I struggling? Am I not really desiring properly? As an individual devotee, am I doing my part to desire properly? Are my desires aligned with the desires of Srila Prabhupada? Am I thinking like Srila Prabhupada? Am I wanting to assist Srila Prabhupada sincerely? Is my heart filled with desire for that purpose? Okay? We need to know why. Let us identify what is going on in our hearts. Because in our hearts, there are a few things which can go on. And I'm not addressing everybody here. Please forgive me. Some of you may not even need anything, but I'm just trying to make a statement here. So I'm just trying to go in a certain logic. So what are we and what are we in this particular moment? Let's see this. Krishna, ultimately Krishna's servant Srila Rupa Goswami says, Anya Bilashita Shunyam, Jnana Karmadi Anavratam, Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam, Bhakti Ruttama. Uttama Bhakti, which is the highest quality of bhakti, Prema Bhakti has one quality. There cannot be any contamination. There can be no Mishra Bhakti. There can be no mixed devotional service. Yeah? There is something called Karma Vidya Bhakti. There is Jnana Vidya Bhakti. So we want to understand as to whether there's contamination which is going on. So Srila Rupa Goswami is saying, Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karmadi Anavratam Anukuliyena Krishna Anushilanam Bhakti Ruttama. Now let us see if any one of us or all of us identify with this verse. This is critical. Yeah? We have to accept certain things so that we could move forward. This is 7.16. Chaturvida Bhajante Mam Janaha Sukritino Arjuna Artho Jigyasur Artharti Jnani Cha Bharata Rishabha. O best among the Bharatas, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, the desirer of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the absolute. Now, I do not want to see a show of hands. Okay, I'm just going to read out. How many of us sit before Krishna and chant and are a part of this movement and we are acting out wanting Krishna to completely remove all our distress? All our worries. Krishna, remove all my distress. How many of us do that? Just keep that in mind. If you're doing it, keep it in mind. How many of us in this room are desirers of wealth? How many of us desire wealth at some level? You could be a Vaishya, a businessman. The desire for wealth is natural in that varna. But it is important for us to ask ourselves whether we are desiring that. So Krishna is saying here, four kinds of pious men begin to render devotional service unto me. The distressed, the desire of wealth, the inquisitive, and he who is searching for knowledge of the absolute. So we find that in our minds, we either are praying to Krishna and connecting to Krishna, wanting to be free from the suffering of this material world, like a jnani. A jnani is one who has realized that this material world is completely full of suffering. His objective is nothing in this world. It is nothing in the material universe. He does not even want to go higher. He is saying, I want to be liberated. I want to be out. This jnani wants liberation. How many of us want out of this universe? Regardless. When we are praying to Krishna to be relieved of certain kinds of suffering, when we are praying to Krishna to be relieved of certain kinds of suffering, that becomes the goal. We are asking for peace. Peace is required. Peace is required for anyone to prosecute sadhana. But peace is not the objective of Krishna consciousness. Please remember this. Peace is not the objective of Krishna consciousness. We do not chant asking for a peaceful life. We are chanting for prema. And if prema comes to us with disturbance, and that disturbance is required to relieve us of certain kinds of attachment, we are okay with it. This is what pious people do. They are asking for relief. Our business is not to ask for relief. Our business is to ask for prema. We want to fall in love. We want to be inconvenienced enough to fall in love. It's okay, Krishna. Inconvenience me as long as you're taking me on the right path. When there is an inconvenience in life, if we are chanting nicely, if we want to associate, if we want to come to the Sangha, if we have good meditation on Krishna, then please understand that that particular affliction is particularly welcome, because that is Krishna's arrangement to relieve us of our attachments. If Krishna consciousness is progressing, while there are problems, please understand that that is connected to Krishna. If Krishna consciousness is not progressing, while there are problems, then there are karmic issues. There's a big difference between the two. So we do not want to specifically say, Krishna, give me peace. We want to be greedy enough to say, Krishna, do whatever it takes so that I can come closer to you. Do whatever it takes so that I can be relieved of the specific attachments that I have in my heart, which I can't see. It's not perceivable to me. I have been giving up on this opportunity for many lifetimes. You have been sending your dear servants every lifetime. They have connected to me. I have been giving up this opportunity. This buddhi yogam process of Krishna giving us intelligence to approach him has already been given. Are we grasping it? Are we on the platform of wanting relief like a pious person? Or are we on the platform of wanting Krishna? There's a very big difference. This is the reason why Srila Rupa Goswami said, Anya Bilashita Shunyam, Jnana Karmadi Anavritam. He said, if you're going after Jnana, which is relief, or karma, where you're a desirer of facilities in this world, I want this and I want this and I want that, it can happen. When does someone really go out and ask Krishna for many things? When does it happen? At what level of consciousness would a participant in Krishna consciousness ask for many things? At what level? What is the specific mode amongst the three modes that person is participating in? Rajas, exactly. The individual is not even in sattva. He is not in the mode of goodness. He is in rajas or she is in rajas. When you are in rajas, there would be many demands out of this world. I like this, I don't like this. The mind is accepting, it is rejecting, it is accepting, it is rejecting. There's a lot of demand which is being made of this world. This is rajas. So the person who is desiring things is in rajas. But our platform is the platform of goodness at the very least. So when we are in this particular situation of 7.16, but Krishna is telling us that come to 10.10 of the Bhagavad Gita. We are in 7.16 because we come into this movement due to various reasons. We come into this movement due to various reasons. Some of us come into this movement as a relief. Some of us come into this movement as a matter of understanding God. We come into this movement as for several reasons. Then we are working outside. So there are challenges outside which make us desire certain outcomes out of this particular practice. When we desire certain outcomes out of this practice, then we fall into the 7.16 category. We are entering into Mishra Bhakti. We are entering into Mishra Bhakti. We are either desiring moksha or we are desiring swarga, going to the heavenly planets. We are not desiring Krishna Prema. This is 7.16. So devotees who are in 7.16, Krishna is telling us, come to 10.10. In 10.10, he says, to those who are constantly devoted in serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So there is a gap between 7.16 to 10.10. In 7.16, there are all kinds of desires coming in and out. Not all of them are favorable for Krishna consciousness. So the process of Harinam removes all sinful reactions. As a consequence, all desires go away with Harinam. All sinful desires go away with Harinam. Then why is it that a devotee is struggling with material desires? Why is it that we are struggling with so many aspects of our life when we are prosecuting Krishna consciousness? If we are prosecuting Krishna consciousness and we are not enthused by the process on a day-by-day basis, while we are having challenges, we should understand that something is going wrong. Because Harinam can remove all the sinful reactions. Millions and millions of lifetimes of sinful reactions and the influence of pious actions can be completely eradicated by Harinam. Harinam is so powerful, Nama is so powerful, it can completely remove. So if the Harinam is completely removing sinful reactions and we are experiencing a freedom from sinful reactions, even an early devotee, even a bhakta who is coming into this movement in the first year experiences peace. They experience a certain peaceful contemporary, you know, they feel quite peaceful when they come into this particular movement. They contemplate and they feel they're quite peaceful. The agitation is gone. This is almost in the first few years, few months of coming into this movement. What to say of deeper practice? So when Harinam is being chanted, all sinful reactions are removed. Just Harinam removes everything. If Harinam is removing all sinful reactions, why are there problems in devotee lives? Specifically, what is to be noted here is if we have problems in our life and we are not eager for nama, we are not eager for association, we are not eager for service, if we are not eager to come and be a part of the dham, this combination requires special notice. What is the combination again? Problems in life in combination with lack of enthusiasm for devotional service. Why should this happen? Anybody have any clues? Yes, Prabhu. It is the ego, yes. But then why does the ego come up when we have already been given the ability to move forward and understand that we are Krishna's servants. Why should it come up? There's a reason. There's a very specific reasons for devotees who have come into this movement, who have received Harinam, who have received faith from the heart of a guru, to receive all of this, to chant and to find relief and to progress further, and after a few years, there's a complete stop. There are problems in life and no enthusiasm for devotional service. Why? Yes, who's one moment, Prabhu? Sorry, I just want to say, I heard from the Mataji's side. Yes? Fantastic. Yes, aparad. Yes, going against the mood of Srimati Radharani. Aparada, going against the mood of Srimati Radharani. When a devotee has received mercy, they are receiving faith from the heart of a faithful devotee. Shraddha and bhakti are in the heart of devotees. We receive Shraddha and bhakti from the heart of devotees. The devotee takes their Shraddha, their faith, their particular bhakti, and they pass it on to us into our heart out of mercy. This is Adav Shraddha. When we meet an exalted devotee, when we are meeting a fixed practitioner, their faith is quite high because Krishna has given them experiences. Because of those experiences, because their faith is so high, they have the ability to distribute Krishna. They are taking that faith and giving it to us when they are speaking, when they are doing kirtan, when they are giving us the beads, when they are initiating us through mantra. Faith is being given, sambandha is being given, Krishna sambandha. But what happens when all of this is cut off is when we lose enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness and we are also having problems in our life as devotees. Please understand that this is due to aparad. There is no other reason. Harinam can take all sinful reactions away. Devotees do not suffer due to sinful reactions. They don't. Krishna will never allow our sinful reactions to impact Krishna consciousness. Please understand that. Krishna does not interfere with Krishna consciousness. Krishna doesn't interfere with Krishna consciousness. He has no motivation to interfere with coming closer to his devotees. He doesn't interfere with Krishna consciousness. He is helping. Here he is saying, I'm going to give you intelligence. But why is this happening? Why do devotees who have come in and who have engaged in the process lose enthusiasm and develop material desires? They develop desires after hearing so much. They give up the goal of Krishna consciousness and say there's something else to pursue. There were some who practiced for 30 years and then they turn back and say, I should have done something better with my life. Why does this happen? This glorious road to Krishna consciousness, it comes to a halt even after many years because Bhakti Devi just goes away from their heart. This is because of aparad. There's only one reason. It is how we treat other devotees. This is aparad. Krishna says, even if you don't treat my form of the deity nicely, even if you commit seva aparad during puja, during the aratis, I don't have a problem with that. Krishna says, my nama can take seva aparad out of your hearts. If there's a problem with seva aparad, Harinam can take seva aparad out of our hearts. We beg for mercy. We say, Krishna, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do this mistake. I shouldn't have done this mistake. I did not know this etiquette. Please, Krishna, forgive me. This particular Nama Prabhu Krishna, Krishna in his name, forgives us and takes away the effect of bad service. That's not a problem. So, sinful reactions are not a problem. Bad service is not a problem. If a devotee is suffering, it is because of the fact that they are in touch with aparad. They have come in touch with aparad. Before aparad happens, it has already happened in the mind of the devotee for many, many days. Nothing is spoken unless it has been thought out. Let's remember that. Nothing gets spoken unless it is thought out. It has been contemplated. It has been digested in certain ways. There's a certain bad attitude and it is being spoken out. This is very important for us to understand what is it which is keeping us. Why should we be a pious person? Piety, material piety, is not for us. We are after the source of everything. We are after Krishna. We want to play with the Samambonam. We want to play with Krishna. We want to feed him. We want to grab the food from his mouth. Yeah? There are devotees who want to climb on his shoulders and play like a boy. We want to be close and we want to have an extraordinary loving relationship with Krishna. Why would we be interested in the goal of piety? Karma kanda, fruitive activity is not for us. In fruitive activity, there's a danger. When we come in touch with Krishna with the motivation of gaining something, the motivation to gain something is much bigger than Krishna. There's a danger with karma kanda. Krishna becomes a part of the process. We see that in Srimad Bhagavatam. Someone is worshipping Krishna, someone is offering prayers, but they have some other motivation. So Krishna becomes a part of karma kanda. You see? It's very important to understand that he has now become a part of karma kanda. So that's the danger of karma yoga. That is the danger of karma yoga where Krishna has become a part of it. But what Prabhupada is talking about is action in Krishna consciousness. When do we act in Krishna consciousness? When do we act in Krishna consciousness? When do we act as anybody? How does one act as a mother? How does one act as a father? When you use the word action, how do you act? What is it that you need to know? What is it that you need to know when you're acting? What is it that you need to know? No fruits. Those are philosophical answers. I'm asking about a practical question. Before you act, what do you need to know? I need to have an identity of a father. Sorry. I need to have an identity of a father. And once I have the established identity of a father, then I would know how to act as a father. When you become the manager of a company, the company tells you that these are your duties. You first establish an identity. Once you establish an identity, along with identity comes duties, comes dharma. We act after establishing ourselves in a certain position. So, when he says action in Krishna consciousness, what do we mean? What is it which is expected of us? What is expected of us is to know who we are in relationship to Krishna. Srila Prabhupada is saying, if someone has deep sambandha, someone has very deep sambandha, then once they have that particular sambandha jnana of their relationship with Krishna, then externally their action would be for Krishna. If Mother Yashoda or Krishna's personal associates, if they were to come here, will they have trouble acting for Krishna? Will they have trouble? No. Why would they not have trouble? It's because they have an established relationship and they know that this is Krishna, he is my son. This is Krishna, he is my friend. This is Krishna, he is my master. They know their relationship. When you already know that relationship, then there is a certain intelligence which comes and we are able to act according to that. There's a relationship. They already know. They already know. That is why it is said, the Uttama Bhakta sees Krishna in everyone. He is completely related to Krishna. He is seeing Krishna in everyone. He can't even give Krishna consciousness because he thinks nobody needs to be given anything. I can see Krishna in everyone. Krishna is acting. Krishna is doing this. He is constantly seeing Krishna. So the Uttama Bhakta needs to downgrade himself to the Madhyama Bhakta. Srila Prabhupada was a Uttama Bhakta. He downgraded himself so that he could discriminate. He is discriminating. He has Krishna in his heart. He is discriminating. If he is working very hard, he is working hard for Krishna. Because he has a relationship. We don't have difficulty working for the family because we have an identity and a relationship with the family. We have difficulty working for Krishna because that particular relationship has not developed fully. The issue is with the relationship, action in Krishna consciousness. So how do we go from knowing Krishna as a master to knowing Krishna as a friend, knowing Krishna as a member of a family, knowing Krishna as someone very dear? What is the source of all of that opulence? How do we move from one level to the other? What kind of yoga do we need to engage in? What is the process for engaging and understanding who we are in relationship to Krishna? Sorry? Harinam. Yeah, let's very simply stick to Harinam. Other than Harinam, nothing else is required. if we chant very sincerely, the budding relationship in our heart will open up and it will reveal things to us about who we are. It will reveal who we are in the spiritual sky. It will reveal our connections in the spiritual sky. It will reveal our specific relationship with Krishna in the spiritual sky. And as we progress further and further as a Prema Bhakta, then while being in this body, we are already acting in the spiritual sky. This is from scripture. I'm giving a very simplified version. This is from scripture. Jai Shri Shri Panchatattva Bhagavanaki. This is from scripture. So, very simply put, the process that has been given to us is not complicated. The process is Harinam. The process is the chanting of the holy names. What is the best platform to chant the holy names as we make progress? The platform of goodness. Work around life and work around the activities of life to be positioned so that we could chant Harinam without offenses. What is going to block our ability to move forward? Aparad. Chant Harinam without aparad. This is such a simple yogic process. By doing this, Krishna and our relationship is revealed. Once the relationship is revealed, we receive instructions. We receive instructions. There are no blocks. Once we receive instructions, then there is absolutely no obstacle in executing our life and also Krishna consciousness, which are non-different. There is no such thing as material life and spiritual life. For a real sadhaka, everything is spiritual life. They would change their life, they would change their lifestyle, they would change their diet, they would change their occupation, they would position themselves in a different place, they change everything so that they could be focused on chanting Harinam. It's such a simple, straightforward process, and it has been given to us with such care that if we were to simply follow this very simple process, we get everything. We get everything. There's no hardship involved. What is difficult about a process? Anybody have challenges? Is there anything difficult about a process? Srila Tamal Krishna Maharaj, once in the Bhaktivedanta manor, this was told to me by a devotee from the manor. When Maharaj was giving a class, everybody was contemplating on what is the challenge with our process. So he said, chanting 16 rounds is not very difficult. Because, you know, it is approximately 90 minutes to 120 minutes. We have a total of 1,440 minutes in one day. Chanting between 90 to 120 minutes out of 1,440 is not a challenge. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj says, no, our sadhana is not difficult. Our diet is not problematic. We love prasadam. We have such a wonderful diet. We have a better diet than everybody else out there. We don't have any issue with people. For most part, devotees are wonderful. For most part, devotees are wonderful. In other words, even if we are all trying to purify ourselves, even then, devotee association is the best association one can ever have in this world. This is a Shastric conclusion. The Shastra says this. The Shastra says the primary lakshana of a devotee is he should chant. When he is chanting sincerely or she is chanting sincerely, good qualities will come on their own. So we don't judge people by good qualities. There are many people out there who will have apparent good qualities, but they are not chanting Harinam. So we can't take their association and ask for their help saying, what do you think I should do about my life? We don't want to do that. They are not chanting Harinam. They are not in touch with Nama. They can't and do not have the authority to guide us. In our temple, we may find devotees somewhat harsh, somewhat not quite in the best of behavior, but they are chanting Harinam. As a consequence, Shastra says, they are always to be trusted because sometime in the future, they will improve. So, our process is very simple. Tamal Krishna Maharaj was saying this. Our process is very simple. If our process is so simple, then why is it that devotees struggle? The answer was given by Maharaj. The process is very simple, but devotees are complicated. Yeah. The process is simple, devotees are complicated. They have complicated demands of life. They are not demanding from life based on what is required for Krishna consciousness. They are basically demanding for life based on what they perceive is required by coming in touch with the mode of passion. When we are in the touch of the mode of passion, we will make demands of life. We will ask for this and we will ask for that. Our lifestyles are complicated. We don't have a goal where we can say that I need to disengage, I need to sit, and I need to chant with complete absorption. So for me to achieve that goal, I need a certain kind of wealth situation. I need a certain kind of living. This is perfectly all right. We don't think like that. A devotee who enters into this world goes out there and then he thinks that it is very good. I also have to aspire for the same things which my neighbor is aspiring for. I have to aspire for the same thing which my colleague is aspiring for. If you're in a corporate situation, you have a boss who is setting goals for you. It is not Krishna, it is not your spiritual master, it is your boss. If the boss is setting goals, he is not going to set goals based on Harinam. This is the difficulty. So we have to tolerate those circumstances, endure those circumstances, not plug into the circumstances, act there as if we have to act in a perfect way. But then it is said in Shastra that you exist like the tongue exists between two rows of teeth. The tongue exists between two rows of teeth. The tongue doesn't get bitten by the teeth. Do you see that? The tongue is quite intelligent. It knows how to escape the teeth. In a similar fashion, we exist in this world. We don't get too caught up. We set our plans by meditating on Srila Prabhupada and the deities. We beg the deities for intelligence, saying, I want to be absorbed in japa. How do I plan for this? We need to understand that complicated life requires passion. And if you have passion, you can't chant. Our chanting requires goodness, sattva. Please understand this. The more we complicate life based on aspirations of people who are not connected to our Siddhanta, we will have difficulties in being able to persecute Krishna consciousness. We need to have our own plan. We can exist outside, but have your own plan. Exist outside, make the money you need. There's a practical need for money. Everybody appreciates it. We are not blind about it. So make the money you need while existing outside, but have different plans. Don't plug into the plan of someone who is not connected to Krishna consciousness, because they are not connected to Nama. Buddhi yoga is not going to come by listening to someone outside. It is not going to happen. It is going to come when we desire to want to come to Krishna. So complicated lifestyles are difficult to manage. We need to simplify. 10 years from now, 15 years from now, this has been my message for the last 4 sessions. I have been sharing this. And the reason I am sharing this is because we have become congregation-based. We are no longer temple-based. Most of the devotees are working outside. And if the devotees who are working outside do not have a concrete plan to disengage from the material world and to be able to plan their life according to the tenets of Krishna consciousness, they would have difficulty in persecuting Krishna consciousness. It's a fact of life. It's a fact of life. More complication, more passion. More passion, difficulty in japa. Simple. It's a very simple paradigm. More complication, it requires passion. You cannot run a large enterprise. You can't run a complicated household without passion. Yeah, that is why a brahmana requires simplicity. Our platform is the brahminical platform. A simple life is where it doesn't mean we have to stay under the tree. No, I am not referring to that. I am not saying we go stay under the tree. I am saying plan for a simple life where it is fulfilling and we have the ability to get absorbed in japa. We are able to absorb ourselves in Krishna consciousness. This is very important for us. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj's statement was that issue is not with sadhana, it has to do with lifestyle. If we don't fix our lifestyle, our sadhana will not get fixed. Krishna consciousness is a process where we have to desire everything for japa, including a lifestyle. I'm not sure as to how much time we have because it's almost been full hour. So I'll stop here, but I'll quickly summarize in the 2 minutes and then we'll go from here. We started out with 10-10, and in 10-10, the gist of 10-10 is that Krishna will give the understanding to come back to Him. So the goal of life is to position ourselves to receive that understanding. To receive that understanding, our Sambandha Gyan has to increase. for a Krishna Sambandha to increase, there has to be collective and there has to be a lot of effort put in increasing the Sambandha. And as we reach the point of Sambandha Gyan and we receive instructions from within, the Super Soul's voice is heard and we are able to plan our life according to what is required. Krishna says he will give intelligence. Then we have the ability to move forward. But why do we struggle? We struggle because many of us are in 7.16. We are not in 10.10. We have so many desires which are unqualified. Then one wonders, if I'm chanting, desires according to Shastra can only come from sinful reactions. How am I getting desires? We are getting desires because there's something going on within the temple environment. There's something going on with ourselves and the devotees. Shastra says, anarthas are four qualities, four categories of anarthas. The third and the most dangerous category of anartha is aparadokrita, comes from aparad. Because we commit namaparad, we develop material desires and we lose taste for devotional service. So this is the whole purpose of speaking around the process of ensuring that there is no namaparad and there is also a desiring for being able to reach a deeper absorption in Krishna consciousness. Desiring is important, devotees. Karma and desire, both are the way things work. If we can desire intensely, karma can be overcome. If we desire intensely, karma can be overcome. Karma is not a difficult thing to overcome. Destiny can be changed by desires. If we desire, things can change. If we desire of wanting to come and chant and be absorbed, things can change. Krishna gets involved. This is there in the Bhagavad Gita as well. Okay? So ultimately the summary is, we have to simplify and have a single aspiration because we have a lofty goal. We have something extraordinarily profound that has been given to us. We have no qualification for this goal, but we have been given this goal and we have been given this opportunity. So we have to practically make every endeavor to reach this opportunity. So we'll stop here and see if there are comments and questions that we can take. So,
Hare Krishna, I have one question from Chaitanya Charitamrita, if this is okay.
I will try, Prabhu.
Okay. I read that before Vishwambar came to this world, there was a lot of sisters who passed away.
Sorry, can you speak up again?
Before Vishwambar came to this world, there were a lot of sisters which passed away before him. Do you know maybe what they represent? Like in Krishna Lila, we know about the whole story, but what about in Chaitanya Lila?
The inference, it is an inference that I have not read details. I have not read details about that. I have just read the same thing that you have as well. I have not read details. But since Gaur Leela is a replication of Krishna Leela, one can make an assumption that they were also the same personalities who practically aided the coming of Vishwambar. We can make that assumption. It's an inference. I would not say that I have Praman for it. I don't have Praman.
Thank you.
Sure. Any other comment or question or blessing? Anything? Everything is welcome.
Haribol, sometimes I have some difficulties with understanding why older devotees, senior devotees, do not follow some etiquette that is quite logical for me. So, do you have any advice for that?
Okay, so the question is that I have difficulty in being able to process a situation where I see senior devotees not following etiquette, which I believe is quite easy to me. If I may ask you, can you just give me one example, if you don't mind, that would make it easier? Is it possible?
For example, a senior devotee who has been in the process for 15 years has the second initiation and then comes to a festival dressed in tight jeans and loose hair, for example.
Okay. Good observation, but yeah. See, first and foremost, this is not a straightforward answer. So I need you to forgive me for not giving you a straightforward answer. But I want to give you a process that has helped me over the years. And perhaps you could use it as well. Over the years, and I have been involved with this movement for 30 years plus. And in 30 years, I've been into many different temples, and there have been many different circumstances that I've seen in different regions of the world, because I have traveled around. I've been in India, in the Middle East, America, everywhere. So I've traveled around and been all of these. And as a movement, as an institution, we have gone through an immense amount of change in these 30 years. Tremendous amount of, I would say, a period of turbulence with a lot of incidents which can shake our faith. But one thing which I found was I used to hear a lot of things. And this is after the internet was introduced. A lot of people used to tell me a lot of things. I used to be very afraid to even go and look up what the situation was on the internet. Because there used to be some criticism of some very senior Vaishnava. There used to be some other criticism of some other person. People used to tell me that this is going on the internet. I used to be very afraid. I never searched for it. I never did a Google search about any Maharaj or any personality in our movement who was facing difficulty, even if I heard about it. I used to hear about it and read about it 5 years after it has happened, because it needed to be done. Because I was dealing with one of their disciples, I was trying to assist them, and I need to read about it. The point I'm trying to make is that while your observations are absolutely accurate, and there should be some sensitivity and some etiquette as we follow and go deeper in Krishna consciousness, as we make progress in Krishna consciousness, that etiquette has to be followed. I appreciate that, because that inspires those who are coming newer and newer into the movement in certain ways. At the same time, as someone who is trying to take the first few steps, I consider myself as one of them as well. I think our focus has to be approaching this very carefully, not in a discriminating way. Because in some ways, externally, their behavior may not align itself with what is going on internally. Do you understand? The road of bhakti is very long. We really do not know what the relationship of Lord Chaitanya is with each person. We don't know. So there could be some deep relationship with that person. But they could be going through a certain period of a little lack of faith. They could be going through a certain period of not being fully absorbed in the rules, regulations. Their own inspiration could be hurt because they have seen someone far senior to them do something which they didn't appreciate. So there could be many circumstances where people could lose faith. So what we need to do is we need to follow the principle of being able to pray for people whom we believe have spent many years in this movement but are now not so much involved. So we need to offer prayers to Lord Chaitanya saying, "Dear Lord, please help them. They have served you so much in the past. Let them also come back. It will be even much better." So our attitude should be to kind of allow Lord Chaitanya to help rather than thinking that this is something which is wrong. Because it may or may not be wrong in his eyes. We do not know. So we don't want to be very judgmental in that. But at the same time, how do we execute our life? It is good for us to execute life according to Shastra. So in other words, if you are aware of etiquette, follow that etiquette. Be completely conservative in your heart. Be completely liberal to everyone else. Yeah? Be very conservative in your heart. Be very strict with yourself. Be very liberal with the whole world. That is the process of Lord Nityananda. So I would advise you that having that approach is easier. And the reason I'm saying this is because in this movement, there are many personalities who can increase our faith. But there are also those who are struggling and who may dampen and hurt our faith. So we need to look at it collectively, and we need to be able to appreciate what is good and also pray for those who are struggling. So that's my advice to you. It is safer. It is safer to look at these things from our standard rather than from thinking they're doing something wrong. Is that reasonable as a process? Because this would allow us to last long. We would last longer this way as a devotee. Otherwise, what would happen is that we would start looking, then we would see many things wrong. And it's a problem that way. So it didn't help me, so I'm just telling you that it wouldn't help you either. So it's better for you to do this. The reason obviously is that they are less sensitive. But at the same time, we want to be careful in thinking there's something very wrong. Yeah. Any other comment or question?
So sometimes it's contradictions, to have a coach and the coach says to you, okay, go to another field and practice there and then come back to me. You know, if you have a coach, you need the field when you can practice and everything like that. You know, you need the whole package. Not just half of the package, but the whole package. Do you understand what I'm...
Yeah, so am I understanding...
Especially for grihasthas, for everyone basically who's not living in a temple.
True.
Outside it's like a Kurukshetra.
It is a Kurukshetra, there's no doubt.
You know?
Yeah, but we have Krishna with us, but please go
on.
Of course. Yes.
So, because...
Previously, before you said how to have this tranquility and peace of mind and everything, especially from the leaders, this is their responsibility to make the environment ready to practice.
True. Are you referring to material leadership? Everything. Yeah. Practically, I would say, I would not disagree with you in this because collective consciousness within a certain region, consciousness within a certain country, that is the responsibility of leadership. That is the responsibility of leadership. However, individual consciousness is the individual's responsibility. So I was giving this class a couple of days back saying, we can't depend on leadership. We can't depend on leadership. We need our own plan, which we are setting up based on our understanding of Siddhanta. When we have our own plan based on the understanding of Siddhanta, and we are chanting the holy names, and we are outside, our life can change to facilitate greater level of absorption in Krishna consciousness and for us to become free from material nature. It can change. In other words, there can be a few changes which Krishna can make as long as we are ready to accept those changes to help us become more absorbed in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, because first is shelter, then is surrender. But if someone cannot give you shelter, then he cannot demand surrender and obeying. You know what I mean?
If someone cannot give you shelter, who exactly are we referring to? You're talking about we can't demand surrender.
Who wants to be a leader but he not give the proper shelter?
No, I'm saying let us for one moment as a statement, as an argument, for one moment let us leave leaders out. Let us leave material leaders out. Let us leave our spiritual leadership out. Let us understand that we have been given what we need. We have been given Harinam. We have been given initiation. We have been given instruction in the Shastra. Let us take all of that, for example, as assets and treasure that we have already been given. Now, when we have been given all of this, we have the ability to sit and say that I want a simple demand. Shastra says being in passion is not healthy. It affects my consciousness. So I have a simple demand out of life. I, Krishna, want to somehow or the other situate myself in goodness at some point in the future so that I can sit and chant. This is a devotee responsibility where we write down and say, Krishna, I want to be in the mode of goodness. Please give me the intelligence so that I can maneuver life and I can change things to my life individually so that I can situate myself in sattva. If that is something which we can do, Krishna helps because there's nama, there's puja, there is deities, they all help. So the point I was trying to make, Prabhu, and what's your good name, Prabhu?
Yure.
Okay, Yurin. The point I was trying to make is that you need to basically engage in the process of planning for yourself with the help of Krishna consciousness, with the Shastra, with nama. If this has been given, then we move forward. So the first and foremost step, Shastra says this, Krishna says this, the first and foremost step is that you need to understand me through tattva. You can't speculate on my position. You need to understand me through tattva. Tattva means Shastra, tattva means Guru, tattva means practitioner, sadhu. So we need to approach sadhu, Shastra, Guru, and we need to understand the position of Krishna. Once we understand the position of Krishna as a tattva, and once we approach someone who has seen Krishna, we receive faith in our heart. That faith has the ability to give us desires so that we could plan a certain future. I am talking about every one of us is individually responsible for our future. We can desire that future and we can make requests during our sadhana, and Krishna will grant us that kind of a future. That is also given in the Bhagavad Gita. That is what I was referring to. There are problems with leadership. I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm talking about material leadership. There can be issues. Yeah, I understand that.
It was just a general question.
I understand. Yeah, no, you were making a general comment. Yeah. I was just wanting to say that we don't want to say it's dependent on someone else. It is better for us to think it is dependent on us. This way we can move forward. Yeah. Anything else? Yes. Hare Krishna.
If some devotee has some project to perform for Krishna, and is it useful to engage this Rajas as active potency, like to perform this job better?
If we are passionate, can we engage the passion in the service of Krishna? Absolutely. A Kshatriya is completely passionate from that perspective. You see, passion runs in a Kshatriya, pure passion. Engaging that passion in the service of Krishna would automatically dovetail all of those energies in the service of the Lord and allow them to make progress. Yes, absolutely.
So in this way, Rajas Guna doesn't interfere with chanting.
It will still interfere.
But it's not a problem.
We still can engage in this. We may be able to engage in activity for the sake of Krishna, but we may have difficulty in being able to engage in Nama Japa. Do you understand that? It's a big difference between the two. Someone might be able to build a huge building for Krishna, but they may not have the ability to sit and chant. While they are working very hard in building this big building, they receive spiritual credits because they are serving Krishna. Those spiritual credits will help them chant better in the future. So that activity is not wasted. It is the best thing to do.
So how do you find the balance between those two gunas? Like, is it better to chant better or better to...
We will act according to our gunas. We will act according to our gunas. If someone is wanting to make money, they will make money. The advice to them is, be a proper businessman as advised in Shastra and offer the results of your work to Krishna. This will purify you. Yeah? That in turn would give you credits. Those credits in turn can be used as fuel for us to be able to sit and chant. But chanting is the Yuga Dharma. Everybody has to make an endeavor at some point or the other. If you are not enthused in chanting but want to serve Krishna in other ways, please go ahead. At some point there would be absorption in chanting, there would be an opportunity as well. So that activity is not wasted.
Thank you.
Yeah, sure. So I am not discouraging other motivations. I am talking about what is the core of our sadhana. Ultimately, even someone who is in deep rajas, who is serving Krishna in so many different ways, should still have the desire to chant. Regardless of how well they are doing, they should have this desire. Because this desire is a very important desire, because this is the Yuga Dharma. But they are still allowed to execute their passions in service of Krishna. It will be accepted by Krishna with love. Yeah. Anything else? Any other question? Sounds like the mode of goodness here. It's very peaceful. Yeah. So thank you very much, dear devotees. I'm seeing a lot more faces, given it's a Sunday feast and Sunday evening. So I'm very honored to meet everyone and very honored to be a part of your Sangha. We really like it here. It's very simple. It's very nice. So I wish this yatra and all the devotees the very best in their Krishna conscious lives. Hare Krishna. Amen.